And he's funny. Time for the show.
We live in a divided world, divided religiously, politically, and economically. Oftentimes in our world, we want to run away from tough conversations that divide us about grief, pain, and loss. We want to avoid topics like shame, guilt, and pride. We'd rather escape to our phones instead of engaging in real conversations. I know this because I do this. So I created the Winter Faith Podcast. The Winter Faith Podcast is focused on creating conversations to promote spiritual and emotional growth through faith, apathy, and everything in between. So, let's talk to each other. Yet more importantly, let's listen to each other. Let's continue the conversation. My name is Andy, and I have Winter Faith. Let's get into it. Welcome, friends, to episode number 63. I can't believe it. I have done 63 of these things, and people are still listening. If this is your first time listening, or your last time listening, thank you, thank you, thank you. I am so pumped today for you to tune in to this special interview slash conversation with Pastor Lisa Yeboah. She is a pastor of the church that my wife and I attend. We are inspired by her leadership and her ability to bring love and joy to all corners of our city in Raleigh. She is the lead preaching minister at Southeast Raleigh Table, where my family attends church. We talk about rest. We talk about being intentional with rest. We talk about Sabbath. We talk about food. And so we just talk about a lot of stuff, and it's fantastic. She's a joy to talk to. If you know her, I know that you think that of her. So without further ado, let's get into it with one of my heroes, Pastor Lisa Yeboah. So I'm sitting here with my good friend, Pastor Lisa.
Yeah.
And we've known each other, I think we've been coming there almost 2 years.
Yes.
I know we weren't married. Dom and I weren't married. And one of the reasons we wanted to have like a church together, that we both were going to different churches in Raleigh.
Yeah.
And got to know each other and wanted to find like our own place. And so one of the things about Southeast Raleigh Table was this idea that race is always on the table, which is something like I grew up in Wisconsin and then moved to Memphis, Tennessee for school. And that was like a big, that was at like Wisconsin was like 98% white.
Sure.
And then moving to Memphis, which, you know, I don't know for sure, but I want to say like 60 something percent black.
Just a different demographic.
And I did CPE in Memphis and we talked about race quite a bit in CPE.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if all CPEs are like that. That's a pastoral program for ministers in chaplaincy at hospitals. And I've worked with other black ministers and pastors, and like this huge like growth of experience for me personally.
Yeah.
And I volunteered at the Civil Rights Museum and drove by the Civil Rights Museum pretty often.
Yeah.
There. And so much of Memphis's history is tied to race as most of our country. But that was something that Dom was passionate about, my wife, too.
Yeah.
So we've just loved, you know, loved being there because I feel like some churches run away from that issue.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, and I would probably even say that, though that's one of our guiding principles, that race is always on the table, that we probably could even do a better job of interrogating racist systems and race as a construct. I think what we're trying to do as a church community is very new. And so people oftentimes land on, oh, you're a bit more diverse than other churches, you know, that I've been a part of. And I don't want that to be where we end.
Okay.
That in my mind, diversity and inclusion is very different than actually being a community that that really tackles race. I mean, because just being in the same room together doesn't necessarily mean we're tackling race in the same way that growing up in, you said Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, yeah.
When a place is completely is predominantly white, that doesn't necessarily mean there's not racist systems to be interrogated. You know, I think right. some people think in the absence of, so yeah, no, but it is a fun and also difficult venture to say, gosh, what would it look like for a church community to get real honest, mm-hmm. Real honest with one another, to learn what it is to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, and then doing something about that, like how we wrestle not just with equality, but we wrestle with equity, and there's a distinction between the two.
Yeah, and I'd start off just kind of diving into that a little bit, because like my podcast, I want it to be about like mm-hmm. having conversations that mm-hmm. are meaningful but difficult.
Yes.
So whether that's grief, which our church has dealt with a lot this yes. summer, mm-hmm. Whether that's race, whether that's shame, like mm-hmm. just the stuff we don't like to, and I even say on my intro, like, that doesn't mean I'm an expert at doing this.
No.
I'm just going to try.
Yeah.
No, I just want there to be yeah. conversations where yeah. we're trying to do that.
Yeah.
So you just got back from
a sabbatical.
Yeah. And where are you, mm-hmm. where are you feeling after coming back
sure.
from that?
So, probably it's helpful for people to even know what a sabbatical is.
Sure.
Because oftentimes when we use the term sabbatical, it's, in reference to people who are in the academy, like professors or folks who are in ministry. And a sabbatical is a season of rest, typically meant for renewal. Although in the academy, sometimes people will take a sabbatical to be able to like spend time working on other projects. And for me, this season away was not to, you know, curate content or to have any result other than I was tired. So mm-hmm. Last summer kind of had it was just a rough summer. And honestly, the last 3 years in ministry have just been so fast paced that I had a moment on my porch probably last July of 2018, where I just realized, like, if I try to go another year, I might get to the summer, but I don't know that I can push through. And that's when I put in the request to take 2 months off this mm-hmm. summer. So, yeah, I can't remember if you asked me something after that.
What things, you know, coming back, are there mm-hmm. things that you've learned
yeah.
from the being
yeah.
away a little bit?
Yeah, you know, so probably two things that were really mind-blowing for me. I think the first is I kept on waiting to have a moment during sabbatical when I would get really excited about work. You know, I was hoping that I was going to wake up one morning and be like, I'm so pumped and I'm so ready. And that moment never came. Like, never
okay.
came. In fact, there was one moment, you know, I did have a small little break in my sabbatical because of a death in our community. And I felt like it was really important for lots of different reasons for me to be present. And just because of some practical reasons needed to be present. Mm-hmm. And just around that time, kind of had a little bit of a crisis around, God, this is really hard, having to kind of re-enter. And started like asking myself, can I do this? Like, am I really meant to do this? Like to be in pastoral ministry? So I think let's say this, after I went back to a season of rest, after kind of, rooting myself in that time of grieving and doing the funeral, I wasn't crying every day. I was like, oh, no, put this in perspective. So I think the first was that sabbatical was really about rest, and it wasn't about becoming excited, mm. you know, for the things that I was doing. It wasn't like, oh, I was going to have a moment where I was going to wake up on a Sunday and say, oh, God, I wish I was eating, you know, gosh, I wish I was preaching a sermon instead of eating this biscuit and drinking this iced coffee this morning, said myself, never. I didn't have like a moment of excitement around like, oh, I just can't wait to be emailing people for most of my day. So I think that was the first one, is like having a new expectation for what a season away can afford us. But the second piece, which is probably the greater gift that I received, was rest is a powerful gift. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful gift. It is a perspective shifter. So prior to sabbatical, certain things felt like mountains that now look to me like molehills.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to sabbatical, certain emergencies, I felt a little like a frenetic energy to take care of those emergencies that now I recognize I'm, as a friend of mine who is a part of our community would say, I'm human-sized, so it might not get worked out in an hour. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably where I've been stretched the most, is recognizing just how powerful rest is.
Mm-hmm.
As a gift in our lives. Like, it just really shifts perspective. I feel human. That's the best way I can put it, is that I feel human now.
Yeah.
Now for a quick commercial break.
I know, I think I've heard you reference this author, but Henry Nouwen,
mm-hmm.
in I don't know which book it is, but he talks about going, like, you go, Jesus went from ministry to community to solitude.
Hmm.
And he had, like, this rhythm of life. And with, like, school starting for our family,
mm-hmm.
life has a different rhythm.
Sure.
And just how exhausting. So we both do ministry. I feel like everybody does ministry,
sure.
to a certain extent. You know, whether you're teaching,
yes.
you know, that's a ministry, or working at a church, or, you know, whatever job you're doing, you have to find, like, these moments of solitude,
mm-hmm.
and that can be really difficult if you're working, have kids, have a marriage. You know, I think about a lot of single moms. I have
mm-hmm.
no idea how they
sure,
find
do.
Solitude,
yeah.
or single dads, for
yeah,
that matter.
Yeah.
But, yeah, is there anything, like, you do to find a little bit of solitude every day? Or rest a little bit every day?
So I've been back. This is my third week post-sabbatical.
Yeah.
And one of the things that that I have felt a commitment to is definitely taking my, like, really taking my Friday off, which, you know,
oh, okay.
which is what I was doing prior to sabbatical, but not really doing, you know?
sure.
In regards to solitude every single day, a new pattern for me that I did develop over the time I was on sabbatical is just starting my morning slower.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to, for those who know me, like, when I go and have lots of energy, but starting my morning slower. So it's not so much that it's like a practice of solitude. I have a dog, and my dog doesn't bark. It doesn't make any noise. So, you know, it's I live in a pretty quiet environment. I mean,
uh-huh.
I'm a loud person, but, and I talk to myself a lot, and I like loud music, but I'm not in a disruptive, incredibly, you know, high energy environment when I wake up in the mornings or when I go to bed at night. But just taking time to settle my mind is better accomplished when I'm not hopping out of the bed, realizing, like, I've got 15 minutes to get someplace. And racing to put clothes on and to maybe brush my teeth and put a little bit of deodorant on one armpit. but just starting off a little slower, it's like I actually can quiet, I can have a quiet within myself that can mirror the quiet around myself. And
mm-hmm.
so I will say that it's just been, I just have been moving a little slower in the mornings, and kind of as I referenced before, the last two Fridays, I mean, they have been days off, and I don't respond to certain text messages. Sometimes I'll, like, let them wait for 3 hours before I respond. It has nothing to do with not loving the people who are texting me or not thinking that what they say is important. No, I believe it's still important, but also not living with such a level of urgency about
mm-hmm.
everything. That's a way of us right-sizing our life and not acting like we're God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone doesn't hear back from me, they will still live, you know, they will be okay. I will be okay. I think sometimes when we respond to urgency, or when we feel like we always have to be in the middle of something, it's us having a false understanding of how much we're needed in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like just having heard you preach for a while, that's like a common theme sometimes, is how do we, like, the chaotic world
mm-hmm.
that we live in, using the model of Jesus, how do we, like, find peace? How do we be a
mm-hmm.
peacemaker?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd say that's one of your themes or not.
Sure.
But I feel like that's something that we talk about in church.
Yeah.
And how, like, this world that we live in sometimes can feel like oh, I have to respond right away. I have to read this. I have to read everything and know everything this minute. Like, the social media world, the news cycle, like even in my own house, it's like, I know I'm the last person to learn about news.
Because
I'm just not as urgent. And, you know, I just wonder, like, how can we as a church, like, slow, like, is that something you try to, like, almost, like, slow down to the church? Like, in your own life, I want you, you're saying, I want to be slower in the morning. Like, how do we do that as, like, a church?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, so, a couple of things you actually just made me think of in this question is, one, first be careful that solitude isn't the same thing as escaping.
Okay.
I think people have to always interrogate, like, am I, when I'm withdrawing, you know, when Jesus would retreat, Jesus wasn't escaping.
Right.
You know?
No.
But instead, solitude, there's a sense that solitude makes more of you. Escaping doesn't. Escaping is saying, I don't really want to have to think about what's happening in the lives of little children who are in cages on the border. That's escapism. We're not called to escape. We are called, though, to sometimes take time to reflect, to ask ourselves hard question, to figure out how we need to show up in the world, not just be about frenetic energy. Frenetic energy, just being busy for business sake, doesn't mean we're being productive. So I think I just want to, to say that. And so I think with this whole idea of, like, slowing down, I don't think it means, like, you got to do everything at a snail's pace. I think it means we got to be more intentional. Mm. So I could replace the word my mornings being slower with, actually, my mornings just need to be more intentional. They need to be more thoughtful. They don't have to even be methodical. I'm not an overly methodical person, which is kind of interesting. You know, sometimes I'll eat my breakfast while I'm in the car. I don't feel like I have to sit down and eat my breakfast and, like, savor the yogurt. You know, that's just not me. But I do want to be intentional. It's like, but I want to be nourished before I leave, because I know I'm going to be a hangry, not so helpful person if I haven't, my blood sugars get low. So now really answering your question around, our church community.
Yeah.
If you are not intentional, if you don't take some time to either slow down or be thoughtful, what you might call being a peacemaker is actually you just being a peacekeeper. Like, you subdue people. Mm. If you don't slow down and become a little more thoughtful, intentional, what you call being the hands and feet of Jesus might be called, I want everyone to see what I'm doing in this world now because I want to be congratulated for my good work. What you call spending time with your beloved might actually be, I just am looking for a really great picture, another really great picture for Instagram.
Right.
I think being, and this is where rest, slowing down, being intentional, thoughtful helps you. It helps keep you really honest. I don't think I realized what my life really felt like occupying my life, what my life really felt like until I was on this season of sabbatical.
Mm.
And I think it's why Jesus sometimes would take time away. It's kind of like, I got to come home to myself. Like, I need to know, Jesus would then be reminded again what it was to be about the Father's business. And it didn't come when he was in the middle of a crowd with people screaming. It's like when you sometimes, have that time for rest. So I think, I don't know that I'm trying to, like, slow up what our church does.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be more, we can be more honest about what we have the capacity to do, and when we do it, that we're doing it out of a means of intentionality and thoughtfulness.
Yeah, I just think about my own life, like, how intentional am I with my marriage and with parenting? There's a lot of times where I just, let's just have the TV on, and that's, hopefully that keeps her focused, but even that doesn't always work, And I like that word intention, to be more intentional.
Yeah.
And not just like, oh, I need to watch one more show or I need to read one more article so I have more knowledge on something that I think's important. I order a lot of books and then don't read them.
Yeah.
I'm like master at that.
Yeah.
I read a lot more books when I was like required to take a test about them.
Yeah.
And so, just being intentional with time. Yeah, I think that's something I know. It's like it's not like as a church, I guess, but it's like the people in the church, we want to be people that yeah. are about that.
Well, you know, I think something that people have said to me, which I really appreciate, is they were so happy that I took a sabbatical, not because they don't love me or care about me and wanted to get me out of here, but it also models it, you know, if I model being all over the place, jumping here, there, and everywhere in Raleigh, here, then I'm there, then I'm bouncing off of that. If I model that, if I model a life where I'm like so in it to win it, I need to also model a life where I don't always respond to email, don't always respond to text messages on my day off, or where people see me also walking down the, you know, the aisles of the grocery store, not crazy or wild, or bump into me at the art museum, also enjoying art. Like people, I think being a pastor doesn't mean that you become like the model of what it is to be human. That's not why I'm a pastor. But I think pastors do have a responsibility. All of us have a responsibility to model all aspects of life. And I am a human being, which means that I also need to model rest. And I would hope that there are folks in our community who, if they're feeling at the point of burnout, if they're feeling like they just, like, you know, it's just been so hard to get through another day because they are so daggum fatigued, that they might also have this sense like, it's okay for me to take a season of rest. One thing that I think we need to know about, let me just say something that I feel about the sabbatical. I didn't earn the sabbatical. And I want to say that one more time. Yeah. I didn't earn the sabbatical, which is why I didn't come back being like, now I got to make up for what I haven't done for the last 2 months. I didn't earn a sabbatical. I deserved it. And I know that sounds like, what? But I'm going to say it again. I didn't earn it. We didn't earn God's rest. Adam and Eve, like, you know, the first day of creation for humanity was that Adam and Eve received a day of rest. What did they do? They didn't do anything. They didn't say they had worked in the fields for 4 days, that they produced a major crop, that they even got along well and had a productive theological conversation in the garden. Just out of being created, God gave them the gift of rest. And I think many of us get bamboozled into thinking that I got to earn rest. Like I got to work in a certain way to earn the right to rest. And it's like, no, rest is given to you as a gift. You're not grabbing it out of God's hands. God is hand delivering it. Now, that doesn't mean we get lazy and think that we can just be any old kind of way and then want to quote unquote take seasons of rest. The thing is, when you're lazy, you're already resting.
Not intentionally,
but you're already right. resting. But yeah, I don't feel like I had to earn it. Like I had to do something. And God dog it, that we would never believe that burnout is then what lets you earn. No, we deserve it. We deserve to be our best selves.
We deserve to be our best selves. That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
I also had this question. What made you, like, did you grow up thinking you're going to work for a church and be a pastor?
No, not at all.
So where did that come from? Some of that story.
Yeah. So my dad is a pastor. Uh-huh. I've always like had a love for the church. So I wasn't one of those PKs who didn't like church. I really did have a love for the church. Yeah. I had a healthy understanding of how difficult it was to be a pastor. For some of you who might know my father, I love him deeply and I respect his ministry, but I also feel like the church was his mistress. As a 42, almost 43 year old, I don't like to lie about things. I mean, that's just how I feel about it. And I'd probably say that to him if he were sitting here, and he knows that. So this is not a throwing my dad under the bus. I think that actually gave me a healthy appreciation for what the work demanded of him. And what I didn't want to do. So I actually grew up one thing I won't do is I won't be in pastoral ministry. And it's a long story as to how I got into pastoral ministry, but I will say this much. I feel like every season of my life was just setting me up to, embody the role of a pastor. I was a science major in undergrad. So, you know, I really did not like go out of my way to do that. But I've always had a foot anchored in the life of the church. And also too, I think had a healthy foot always anchored in the realities of the world, to know that those two things don't need to be, they're not disconnected. It's not a pendulum. You know, there's a lot more fluidity between what it is to just be, to be at work in the world, as all of us who are kind of what are we like? You know, we are of a royal priesthood, and so even I was doing another podcast yesterday, and I was like, you know, I see myself as a parish priest. Like when I'm at Happy and Hale, I show up in a particular way. When I'm at Alamo Drafthouse, I'm going to show up in a particular way. It's not like I only become a pastor when I'm standing behind, you know, a pulpit or if someone decides to put a robe on me. In the same way that I might be decked out in a full Lululemon outfit on a Sunday morning, it's like, why do I have to wear a robe? Like, I'm a pastor even as I'm wearing this as I preach. So, yeah, I just, it's a long story. That is going to be a whole nother podcast.
That'd be
another time. Yeah. One thing I would love to talk about, though, is what I actually did during sabbatical.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I didn't just, like, you know, lay on my bed in a supine position, waiting for the dove of righteousness to, like, sit on my shoulder and say, you've rested enough. Like I said, one of the things that I did the first week was intentionally asking myself in the mornings, Lisa, what do you want to do? Because it was like the first time that, like...
You were here?
I was in Raleigh.
Okay.
I was in Raleigh for the first week, at least.
First week.
And the first week. And I was just like, okay, Lisa, what do you want to do? And some days I went to Whole Foods. One day, it's been a long time in Whole Foods in North Raleigh. The people probably were a little nervous about how much time I spent in Whole Foods walking up and down those aisles. But just things that I typically would not be able to, like, savor. I wanted to do. I ate at Rye's Biscuit a lot. I went to Brew Works on Lane Street. Shout out to my people at Brew Works on Lane Street. And drank a lot of iced coffee. I actually kind of picked up an iced coffee addiction over the summer. I was like, this is delightful. Who knew? I typically like my coffee hot, but now I like my coffee cold. So I split time between being in Raleigh, but being kind of hiding out in Raleigh, and then traveled, mostly because I wanted to hang out with friends who I'd gone to college with.
Sure.
So I went to, like, Knoxville and hung out with college friends and people that I love deeply.
Yeah.
My family, although I didn't get to see all my family, but that's okay. Went to Dallas, went to Houston.
So just visiting friends, not like going to like a conference or just social. Yeah.
Yeah, social.
Yeah.
Drinking good coffee.
Yeah.
Eating good food.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have some people here in Raleigh that I like that I love. You know, like just some real good friendships. Like one day, you know, went to Durham, had ice cream, went and did karaoke, like just hung out. And it was just so nice because I didn't have to think, oh, and then tomorrow morning I need to like open up my laptop and get emails done. And you know, the thing that there are a lot more things about sabbatical that I came out, but I was missing being the Lisa who was known not just as a pastor.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I wanted to be around people who...
That knew you before.
Who knew me before.
Yeah.
Who might say, oh, when you were a freshman in college, God, we totally can see how you had pastoral sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was the... I won't tell you some of my funny stories in college, but, you know, but how I showed up for people in very pastoral ways.
Mm-hmm.
And... But I was yearning for it. I was yearning to be with friends who, when I walk into a room, I don't have to say anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the third week of sabbatical, I'd come back from a week-long intensive, this thing called on-site, where you do, like, psychodrama, narrative therapy. It was, like 2 years' worth of counseling reduced into 1 week. And it was like, life-changing and quite a breakthrough. On my way back, someone that I love deeply who... I went to college with, I saw him. He was the first person I saw after I had been at this, you know, intensive workshop.
Mm.
And I just remember thinking, like, this is so lovely because this person knows me so well. and I was like crying. I mean, it just kind of had like a little season of like moment of like crying. But I didn't have to be a pastor. Like,
right.
Even with people who I consider to be my friends who are part of my congregation, there's always still like a thing in me that has to just kind of like think about my boundaries, you know, about how much can I share in the moment? How much can I give in the moment? And, but to be with someone who knew me back in 1994,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I had a bad asymmetric, you know, haircut, I can occupy myself a little bit differently. And I was like, oh, this is so wonderful to, you know, to be with a college, someone who I love deeply from college who could like show up for me in that particular way.
There is something about that where you can be with somebody who knows you for a lot of stages of your life. Like, it's like, you know, when you have a wedding, you don't just invite people from one stage of your life.
Yeah.
And that's like the joy of the yeah. wedding is like, hey, there's somebody here who knew me when I was 5.
Yeah.
And I met my wife 2 years ago. Like, that was my experience. Well, actually less than that.
Yeah.
But to see, and one of the really fun things is it like, it just helps you bring you back, like, who am I?
Yes.
And, like, I need to answer that question quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm more reflective than some.
Yeah.
But then when I get to, like, pass on, like you see an old picture that of yourself, and then you get to show that to, like, your daughter. Like, that's, like, the surreal experience because it's, like, back and forwards.
Forth, yep.
And, like, I don't know. I think that's so good that you got
yeah.
to do that because it's
yeah.
just, it's such a good, healthy connection. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand how people can, like, grow up in the same city and live in the same city as an adult.
Yeah.
My wife and I talk about it because I'm like, that's got to be so weird. Like, I could not comprehend seeing my elementary school on a normal basis.
Yeah.
That would be so confusing to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're, 2,000 miles apart.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to be like, that was one stage of my life, this was another stage. So, but I love going back.
Yeah.
But I always wonder, like, that's got to be so surreal, like driving to work on a school or on a road you used to go to school at.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. Well,
just something I think about.
I mean, I was craving, not that I was craving being my old self.
Right.
I was craving the things that are so familiar that I don't have to do a whole lot of like mental work to feel at home.
Yeah, it's just a deep connection. I don't know. Something about connection,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Like, it's a easy connection. Like, you're not working for
yeah.
it. It's just like, boom, it's there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing this person's face, and I'm, like, so connected.
Yeah.
It just makes you feel... It gives you energy, maybe.
I got to spend time with my childhood best friend.
Yeah.
Which we have known each other since 4th grade, best friends since 7th grade, went to college, all 4 years lived together. So anyone who says that you can't live with your best friend, you know, let's talk.
You can
talk.
Make it work.
You can make it work. Yeah. But I think it's just like needing to be in spaces with people who I didn't have any obligation to them but to just show up.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have any obligation but for them to also just show up. Because as a pastor, I've taken vows for people. I've taken that, you know, to serve and not to be served, which means that there's always, like I said, kind of with a boundary, there's always going to be this thing that I have to be mindful of. And I will say this much, probably as I was just getting to, just to the place of about to take the sabbatical. So like last spring in particular, now I can look back and see how the boundary lines were beginning to like fall apart. Like I wasn't keeping really great boundaries. I was relying on people, in ways that that now I can look back and be like, ooh, I was not at my healthiest, as a pastor. I am revealing too much. I am asking people to carry too much emotional weight, of mine. And so I think, you know, being with people who knew me when reminds me like, ooh, I still have people who I need to be able to, who can pour into me and I can pour into them and who can also be there for me in ways that I really shouldn't ask my congregation to show up for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to switch gears. I hope they're fun questions. I think it kind of relates, but one of the things my wife wanted to ask is, make sure I get it right here, but so it's related to the Enneagram.
Ah,
so
yes.
We've been studying this, and she just said, So she's an Enneagram 9.
Okay.
Is that...
So am I.
So are you. Okay. Uh-huh. I want to make sure
I'm a 9-wing 1.
9-wing 1. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's... see, the best way to say this. Like, what's your best advice for Enneagram 9? Or, like, the most important thing you, like, know about what it means to be an Enneagram 9?
Nine, okay.
Something like that.
So nines are sometimes called the mediators or the peacemakers.
Peacemaker, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The nine is at the... we are at the top of the Enneagram. we sit at the top of the Enneagram. So the Enneagram is like the 9 points. So we're at the top of the Enneagram, which means that nines typically can see the world through the eyes of all the other eight numbers.
Okay.
So that's why we are great peacemakers. It's kind of like, I can understand why this person will push back in this moment. I can understand why this person would hide in that moment. I can understand why that person wants to create in this moment. We just have an understanding. The problem sometimes with nines is that nines can seem like they agree with everything, but that they don't actually know what they feel. So meaning nines can, in an unhealthy state, merge with everyone else. Like, so they can, it looks like they kind of go along with the flow. Or another way of putting it is that nines can fall asleep to their own lives.
Wow.
So much of a cheerleader for other people, so much in tune with other people, what other people are passionate about or want to do. But if you ask a nine, what do you want to do? It's kind of like, you know, that's a caricature way of putting it. So I would say that with nines have to like develop this internal voice that says, I also, I have a place at this table and I need to trust what I have to say.
Okay.
I have something to say, and the world needs whatever it is that I have to give, because I think nines can almost live an invisible life if they're not careful, or they can make themselves kind of small if they're not integrated. I think the other thing, this is just for me as a nine, was learning that to lean into conflict and not to see every uncomfortable moment as feeling like a life or death moment.
So nines like avoid conflict.
Yes, typically they avoid nine conflict. And you have to remember, you know, when a nine is healthy, that might not be the case. Or as a nine is like becoming an integrated nine, that might not be the case. But oftentimes, nines can be they can very much like avoid conflict.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to find your own voice.
Yeah. So
I think that's a great
question for a nine to always ask themselves is, I mean, and it's going to sound so simple, is what do you want?
What do you want?
Nines can be very laid back. And so nines have to ask themselves, am I being laid back or do I know that nobody else is going to want to do what I'm going to do? So I'm going to do what everyone else is going to do.
Mm.
And that can be as simple as, what restaurant are we going to go to? Because nines also have a great, they have good emotional radars to know what everyone else wants. And so if they, really want a salad, but they know that everyone in the car wants barbecue, they'll, you know, typically go along with having barbecue as opposed to saying, actually, we would love a salad.
Mm.
And like kind of being honest about their desires.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This, I guess, is just talking about food.
Uh-huh.
Do you have like your best favorite restaurant that you went to on your sabbatical?
Ooh.
Or another way is like your favorite, just kind of memory lane, like your favorite hometown restaurant or something. I thought that'd be fun to talk about.
Yeah. So I went to Waco, Texas, and got to go to Magnolia at the Silos with, because my best friend, she has a great aesthetic and loves Fixer Upper on Home and Garden Television. So we went out to the Silos at Magnolia. And they have a restaurant, that's connected to their whole enterprise, and it was delicious. It was so good.
What is it?
It's kind of like a diner.
Oh, okay.
And I ended up having like a watermelon, like a fresh watermelon salad, which, you know, but it was because earlier in the day I had had these two biscuits with like a strawberry butter, and it was a situation. I was not in a good place. It was so delicious, but that was really good.
Okay.
And then I went to this restaurant in Houston Houston, there were just some, there's a place, there's a coffee shop called Toot Sweet. Phenomenal. Mm. What did I have at Toot Sweet? All I remember is that the interiors were really beautiful. I'm a kind of a sucker for really beautiful spaces.
Okay.
And so there were lots of really beautiful spaces that I got to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I realized like I really like Houston. It's like gritty. It's got really gritty areas, and it's got really like kind of I don't know. There's a certain grit about Houston that I was like, this.
Huh.
I never thought I would ever say this out loud, but I could like live in a Houston. I totally get Beyonce. I feel you. Like you mean it? Houston was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who live in Houston don't like Houston, but I was like, it's got an energy to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some friends I feel like live in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple, but I've never been there myself.
Yeah.
So, did you do a lot of CrossFit on your, during your sabbatical?
I did do. I worked out a good bit, especially when I was home here in Raleigh. So shout out to my 12th state family. But yeah, did a lot of CrossFit. And it was really important for me to keep up with just a lifestyle that wasn't, oh, I'm on sabbatical, so I'm just going to eat whatever I want to.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to, like, not show up at the gym for the next 2 months. It felt good to still think about what I was putting in my body and also to how I was moving my body.
And I've heard, like, CrossFit is a lot about community.
It is very
much. Is that
much
right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's
yes.
kind of, like, the big thing. Because I see the workouts, I'm like, I mean, I like hanging out with people. I don't know if I want to
do
that workout, but I mean,
yeah.
I like a lot of the people that
yeah.
go.
Yeah. No, I did. It was really lovely. I worked out a lot more in the morning because of just, I mean, my days were slow. So I worked out a lot in the morning and it was good. It was good for me not to, quote unquote, veg out. Like that's, I don't feel like resting necessarily means vegging out. I think resting
right.
can be kind of active as well.
And like, just like everything, when you're intentional about it, I think it's better.
Yes.
Like with your like super intentional, like I'm gonna go see this movie. I'm gonna see it at my favorite movie theater.
Yes.
I'm gonna see it by myself or with people. Like your favorite way to
yeah.
do it. Like if you're super intentional about how this thing goes, that's
yeah.
how I am with movies. So, then I enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I used to like want to go. I'm gonna go at midnight and go see this, and it's crowded. I'm like, this is terrible. This
yeah.
isn't fun.
Yeah, I want to do it on my own terms.
And so just like with rest, if you're really intentional about rest, if you're really intentional about your sabbatical, I think it probably is better.
Yeah.
And then one of the last things I like asking people, and this I think is really a good principle, but just like, what are things that make you laugh or like bring levity
to
your
life?
Mm-hmm. 'Cause life gets pretty serious.
Yep.
And I think we have to have those things. Otherwise, we really... I think that's a way we can lose ourselves.
Yes.
If there's no... Like, if we can't laugh at ourselves
yeah.
or
yeah.
laugh
yeah.
at all.
I don't think that people... I don't think anyone who is in a room with me for more than 3 minutes knows that I don't have a hard time with levity.
Right.
I kind of snack on joy, you know, all day long.
Yeah.
I love to dance. I love listening to my music loud.
Hmm.
I think, and I'm grateful for this wiring, but I think I tend to wake up and every single morning kind of with this feeling of I'm going to seize this day.
Hmm.
So, yes, there are systems of oppression. Yes, there are people who are hurting. Yes. I might even have some, like right now, there's a little situation in my life that just feels a little bit unsettled, and I've got breath in my lungs, and this, you know, bowl of yogurt was especially delicious today, and, you know, oh, the kids at the bus stop made me laugh, and, like, my dog actually, like, jumped up and did something because she doesn't do anything, I've got to get to do this podcast, and, oh, the croissant at Loose at Grace is really delicious, and, like, I think when you keep your eyes open for the things around us that are good and beautiful and lovely and wonderful, it's hard not to sometimes allow those, I like to call them, like, little moments of, like, of delight or joy to pierce into the reality of life. I love to dance. You know, most people who, who get to know me realize like, I'm not a person who lives, who lives concerned about what people are going to think about me right. in regard to like, oh my gosh, your pastor's on the dance floor. Yes, I will be on the dance floor like a crazy person, and I don't need 50 other people to be on the dance floor with me. I've never been a, well, once I wait for somebody else to go out there. That's not me. I'm not... I just have never thought that, you know, I don't understand that. I don't understand why you gotta wait for somebody else. So yep, that, this is really funny, but when I was on sabbatical, I actually took a lot of video of myself and lots of pictures of myself. And that wasn't to be like all like overly like selfie culture. It's cause sometimes I'm like, this was such a fun moment. I want to remember it.
Okay.
And I want to, when I have a bad day, I want to go back to this video of me go like one, like I did a lot of videos before I would go do a workout, like an analysis of the workout for the day. And I crack myself up. I mean, I don't know. Some people, I don't know. I crack myself up. It, mm-hmm. My jokes might not be funny to other people, but sometimes things are funny to me. Mm-hmm. And I really did. I saved those videos and those pictures because I wanted to remind myself, like, on that particular day, this is how you felt. Mm-hmm. You know, it and you can feel that again. If it's, you know, I'm having a particularly rough day.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think that's really true about mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Like, the levity, mm-hmm. the laughter, the mm-hmm. joy. And I think about the line that comes to me is like, is this in the Bible? I think it is. Having faith like a child.
Yeah.
I know it's a song that's in my head right now. But I think of, like, how my daughter, like, runs barefoot in the leaves. And I think you've even referenced that.
Mm-hmm.
In a sermon or something, like that's kind of how I've mm-hmm. seen you at moments.
Yeah.
Of like, I think you enjoy life.
I really enjoy life.
And I still think you need to hear that from people, maybe even yourself, because you can still, I know you forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see that
in
you. I like that about what I'm seeing. And something I was just looking at in here that I guess wanted to close with is like, nothing is more, like, words, sermons, like, that's great, but nothing is more important than, like, your actions.
Yeah.
And I think for me, just being a person that's, you know, more involved in this church a little bit, you know, definitely more than a year ago and more than 2 years ago, like, to have somebody that I look up to for their actions, I think that's really important because I see, like, the actions of your leadership, not just the words.
Thank you.
And so that's why it's fun. I didn't feel like stressed about like, we're going
to have a conversation
and it'll be good.
Yeah.
And there's always like, okay, she's my pastor. Uh-huh. There's always like that there.
Yeah.
But it's better. Like you just be like, yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you can, people have relationships with great senses of like wisdom. Like we can learn, like I grew up with a dad and a grandfather and other men in my life who were always pastors.
Mm.
And so I did see like how that can take over life. And I do think you have like a healthy level of like, this is what my job is, but this is who I am.
Yep.
And then like, this is what, I think that's what God wants us to all to be too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's been fun talking to you.
It's been lovely. Yeah. It's been so lovely. You know, I'm grateful for this opportunity to share because I think one of the commitments I also made to myself post sabbatical is that it probably would not be the best for me to try to go on the sabbatical coffee tour, meaning trying to have one-on-one conversations with everyone about what sabbatical was like that in and of itself might betray a healthy rhythm of life. And so thank you for giving me this opportunity to share maybe in a way that people can listen whenever they have time about what was great about sabbatical. And I hope that after having taken this season of rest, that people will continue to hold me accountable for it not being a one-off, but that the gift that rest was for me will be a gift that informs what I do henceforth and forevermore. So, it was a... thank you. Thank you for this moment.
Thank you. Thank you
for
absolutely.
Today's artwork was done by Dominique Frazier. The intro was done by Scarlett Fox. The music you're listening to, Josh Cleveland. And the creator and editor and producer of the Winter Faith Podcast, yours truly, Andy Frazier. Well, you did it again. You spent your time listening to my show. You probably could have spent this time playing games or binging Game of Thrones on your phone, but instead you spent it with me, so I thank you for your time. If you haven't already, downloaded and subscribe to the Winter Faith Podcast on Anchor. If you haven't already, please leave a review on iTunes with good, bad, or ugly feedback. Also, please consider supporting the show on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. However, I do accept Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, and any other way you want to contribute to the show financially. Okay, my commercials are done. Andy, out.